Imagine waking up tomorrow morning and before you've even opened your eyes, your computer has already read your emails.
Right.
It realized your flight to Chicago is delayed. It rescheduled your morning meetings to accommodate the change. And, it even drafted apologies to your client.
Oh, wow.
And you didn't press a single button. You didn't type a single prompt. Your digital life just, well, managed itself.
Yeah, and
Back alone.
this scenario, I mean, it's no longer just some pitch deck fantasy. We are crossing this major threshold where our technology stops waiting for our instructions and starts actually taking initiative.
Exactly. And that is exactly what we are plunging into today. Welcome to the Deep Dive.
Glad to be here.
We've got a really fascinating foundational document on the table today. It's a May 31st, 2026 analysis from Tech in Morning, and it's titled The Silicon Frontier.
It's a great read.
Yeah, it really is. And our mission today is to cut through all the daily noise of, tech announcements and pull out the actual tectonic shifts happening right beneath our feet.
Because there is a lot of noise right now.
So much noise. But we are moving away from those passive chatbots yet to coax into working, and we're entering an era of fully autonomous AI agents, multi-billion-dollar gambles on physical infrastructure, and some pretty severe disruptions to the everyday tools you use at your desk.
Right.
I'm your host, and joining me to provide the critical context, the actual mechanics of how and why these shifts are happening, is our resident expert.
Thanks. Yeah, we are essentially witnessing a fundamental rewriting of the contract between humans and computers. It's thrilling, but it's also incredibly demanding for anyone trying to stay competitive.
Okay, let's unpack this with our first major development because it completely redefines that contract we're talking about.
Right, let's get into it.
So Google just unveiled Gemini Spark. And from what the analysis outlines, this is not like an update to your phone's voice assistant.
No, not at all.
Spark does not wait for you to ask a question. It's this autonomous, always-on entity running continuously in the background. It monitors your inbox, prioritizes critical messages, automatically drafts contextual replies, updates your calendar based on like real-time traffic anomalies, and even books appointments unprompted.
It's a massive leap.
But reading through the report, something really stood out to me. Google didn't bake this into the standard Android 16 update. They isolated it.
Yeah, they did.
Why would they keep their most advanced AI off the base operating system?
Well, what's fascinating here is it's because of a massive pivot in their business model. By keeping Spark out of the passive Android update, they're launching it as an independent, standalone premium platform.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, think of it akin to like a high-tier Google One AI premium subscription. Google is no longer just selling AI software. They are essentially leasing a digital workforce to enterprises and power users.
Wow, leasing a workforce. Okay, so it's a difference between a reactive intern and a proactive chief of staff.
That's a perfect way to look at it.
Because for the last few years, we've had the intern, right? You give them a highly specific task, they execute it, and then they just stand there waiting for your next command.
Exactly, just staring at you.
Right. But Gemini Spark is the chief of staff. They look at your day, anticipate the bottlenecks, and handle them before you even realize there's a problem.
And consider the implications of that leasing model compared to Google's rivals. Apple is trying to weave their intelligence invisibly into iOS because they want to move physical hardware.
Or they want to sell iPhones.
Exactly, they want to sell you the silicon, but Google wants to sell you the employee. A subscription-driven model for an autonomous agent creates a much more resilient revenue stream than the volatile, cyclical nature of smartphone sales.
Which totally shifts the playing field for you, the listener.
Yeah.
Like, if you're a freelancer or you're running a small startup, this democratizes productivity.
Huge advantage, yeah.
Because Spark operates on a modular, web-based architecture in the cloud, you don't need some $5,000 machine on your desk to run it.
Right, you're offloading all that heavy lifting to Google servers. So small businesses can automate administrative, triaging, and scheduling tasks at a fraction of the cost of hiring human logistics staff.
Wow.
The Tech In analysis actually notes this could potentially increase operational efficiency by up to 40%.
40%? That's insane.
It really is. The agentic web, this idea of machines acting on your behalf, it's a measurable competitive advantage that is available to you right now.
But that creates a really fascinating physical problem. If your digital chief of staff is always running in the cloud handling your life, you need a way to communicate with it in the real world.
Yeah, you do.
Because you can't just walk down the street staring at your phone screen 24/7.
Yeah.
And that brings us to Meta's radical new hardware gamble.
This is where things get really sci-fi.
Definitely. Supply chain leaks and patent filings reveal Meta's Reality Labs is heavily investing in an AI-powered smart pendant, a wearable device with absolutely no screen.
Right, and this is the realization of ambient computing. The whole goal is to remove the visual interface entirely and rely on environment tracking.
So let's break down the anatomy of this pendant, because the specs are wild, but I want to understand what they actually do.
Sure.
The filings mention a 12-megapixel sensor with ultra-wide optics and real-time SLAM capabilities. What does SLAM actually mean for the person wearing this?
Well, think of SLAM, which stands for simultaneous localization and mapping, like a continuous 3D sonar for your camera.
Okay, sonar.
Yeah, it means the device isn't just taking a flat video of the room. It is constantly calculating the depth and geometry of the space around you. It knows exactly where it is relative to a coffee table, a doorway, or an oncoming car.
Oh, wow.
It maps the physical world so the AI can actually understand your physical context.
And it pairs that visual map with audio, right?
Mm-hmm.
The pendant has triple array directional microphones with high-velocity wind noise cancellation.
It's very sophisticated hardware.
And it's powered by a Snapdragon AR1 Gen 2 chip with a dedicated low-power NPU, and it gets up to 14 hours of battery. So you just walk down the street, see a building, and ask the pendant out loud, what architectural style is that?
Exactly.
Or you look at a menu in Tokyo and say, translate this. It's processing sight and sound simultaneously.
Right, and that simultaneous processing is what we call a multimodal model. Early pioneers in ambient computing, like Humane with their AI pin, attempted this vision and hit a brutal wall of physics.
Oh, right. The overheating issue.
Yeah. When you try to process audio, video, and AI translation on a tiny wearable, the device overheats and the battery drains in hours.
Those early devices literally got too hot to wear. So how is Meta bypassing the physics?
By heavily optimizing that NPU you mentioned, the neural processing unit, it acts as a highly efficient, dedicated brain just for AI tasks, which prevents the main processor from working too hard.
Makes sense.
Meta is throwing near infinite R&D budgets at solving the thermal constraints that killed the early pioneers, basically leveraging their incredibly lightweight Llama 4 models.
Here's where it gets really interesting, though. You're walking around a public space with a camera strapped to your chest, continuously recording high-resolution audio and video.
Yeah, that's the catch.
It's mathematically processing the faces of people around you, the private conversations happening at the next table. From a legal standpoint, how does that even work?
Well, it creates a massive collision with real-world legislation, continuously sweeping up biometric data and voice recordings of non-consenting bystanders directly violates stringent privacy laws.
Especially in Europe.
Exactly. Most notably, the GDPR in Europe. Regulators simply will not allow an always-listening, always-watching device to operate freely in public spaces.
So what's Meta's play here? Do they just restrict sales to the U.S. and completely abandon the European market?
They can't afford to ignore Europe. They will likely have to rely on severe software geo-restrictions.
Like GPS boundaries.
Yeah. When the pendant's GPS registers that it has crossed into EU borders, it might physically disable its passive listening or recording features.
Wow, that's intense.
They may also be forced to implement highly visible, unhackable indicator lights to warn bystanders. Translating cloud AI into the physical world introduces unparalleled friction.
Speaking of unparalleled friction, let's talk about the sheer scale of what's required to make all of this ambient computing happen.
The infrastructure side.
Yeah, because to process real-time SLAM data from millions of Meta pendants and to continuously run millions of Google's Gemini Spark agents, you hit another physical wall.
You really do.
The most critical bottleneck for AI in 2026 isn't silicon chips. It's electricity.
It is fundamentally an energy crisis at this point. Hyperscale data centers required for these massive language models, well, they consume power on the scale of entire cities.
Right. And to put the scale in perspective, the Japanese investment behemoth SoftBank just dropped a massive bombshell.
This was huge news.
They are injecting 75 billion euros to construct colossal AI data centers on French soil. These facilities are projected to generate an astronomical 5 gigawatts of pure computing power.
It's a staggering amount of power.
And Microsoft is making similar moves, dropping 5.5 billion euros in Germany and Spain for localized cloud nodes. It reminds me of heavy manufacturing. The modern AI industry is basically the new aluminum smelting.
That's a great analogy.
You know, aluminum plants are always built right next to massive hydroelectric dams because the process requires massive, constant, cheap electricity. You don't put the plant where the workers are, you put the plant where the power is.
Exactly.
AI is exactly the same now.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, the SoftBank investment is really a masterclass in geopolitical strategy. Ask yourself, why France? Why not Germany, which has historically been Europe's industrial powerhouse?
Right. The ticket analysis points directly to the energy grids for that answer. Germany is suffering from severe grid volatility.
Yeah. Following the shutdown and decommissioning of its nuclear fleet, Germany's energy prices became incredibly unpredictable.
You can't have unpredictable power for this stuff.
No, you cannot run a 5-gigawatt hyperscale data center on a grid with intermittent supply. The servers must run 2047 without a single millisecond of interruption.
Right.
France draws over 70% of its electricity from stable, carbon-free nuclear power. By planting its flag in France, SoftBank is securing a guaranteed baseload of clean energy for the next decade of AI warfare. They are, as you said, buying the dam to power the smelting plant.
But building 5-gigawatt data centers and pouring tens of billions of euros into French infrastructure means these tech giants are bleeding cash at an unprecedented rate.
Oh, absolutely bleeding.
And they're going to pass that cost directly down to the consumer and the developer. The honeymoon of heavily subsidized cheap AI is officially over.
This brings us to the financial fallout hitting the global software community right now. GitHub Copilot, the AI coding assistant that essentially became a mandatory standard for software engineers, well, it's abandoning its predictable flat monthly fee.
Which is huge.
Yeah, they are transitioning to a paper token consumption model.
So what does this all mean for you if you're managing a development team? First, we need to understand what a token actually is.
Right.
Think of a token like the meter running in a taxi.
Yeah.
Every time you ask the AI to read a line of code, generate a function, or explain a bug, that text is broken down into tokens. The longer the trip, the higher the fare.
Exactly.
Imagine a developer feeding a massive 10-year-old legacy codebase into Copilot to debug a systemic error. Under a flat fee, that was just a normal Tuesday. Under a paper token model,
the API budget skyrockets exponentially. Suddenly, highly complex, context-heavy architectural questions become financially prohibitive to ask.
You can't just casually ask it to read the whole code base anymore.
Exactly. A chief technology officer could easily budget for Copilot licenses historically because the cost was fixed. Token-based billing makes the baseline cost of software development incredibly volatile. Every single keystroke has a fluctuating financial weight.
Because Microsoft simply can't afford to subsidize the immense computing power required for advanced code generation anymore.
And the resulting fallout is an industry-wide exodus. Enterprise teams are looking at these unpredictable token costs and making a hard pivot.
They're leaving.
They are abandoning cloud-based Copilot entirely. Instead, they are transitioning to locally hosted open source models like Llama 3 or CodeQuin.
Okay, interesting.
By running these models on their own internal company servers, they completely eliminate those unpredictable API costs and regain control over their infrastructure.
And that desire to regain control over heavy, expensive infrastructure is trickling all the way down to the individual desk.
It really is.
The everyday tools you use are undergoing a massive efficiency-driven overhaul. And this is happening both digitally and physically. Let's start with the digital, the 2026 browser wars.
Ah, yes, the browser wars.
Google Chrome and Apple Safari have monopolized web access for a decade, but power users are fleeing.
Because the modern web is incredibly bloated, and Chrome's architecture is notorious for its RAM consumption.
Oh, it's so bad.
It eats up your computer's memory to keep tabs open, which drags down overall system performance. Add mounting privacy concerns to that, and you have a massive vulnerability for disruption.
Right. And the source material highlights two major alternatives capitalizing on this exact frustration. First, you have Arc Browser.
Yep.
Arc fundamentally redesigns how you interact with the web, but its killer feature is Max AI. It's an intense built-in suite that essentially reads the internet for you, providing native summaries of articles and search results without you having to click through 5 different tabs.
That's a huge time saver.
Then you have Brave Browser, which takes the complete opposite approach. Brave doubles down on aggressive privacy, stripping out all the tracking scripts and ads that caused that memory bloat in the first place.
Yeah.
Its native Leo AI explicitly refuses to log user prompts for training data.
Notice the shift in philosophy here, though. The browser platform is no longer just a passive window to the internet. It is an intelligent filter protecting your attention and your hardware.
That's a good way to put it.
Arc offloads the processing of information to the cloud to optimize your workflow, while Brave strips away the bloat to give you absolute privacy and speed.
But this disruption isn't just happening on your screen. It's happening to the very chair you're sitting in. We have to talk about the physical workspace.
This is such a fascinating pivot.
For years, luxury brands like Herman Miller dominated the high-end ergonomic sector. If you wanted to protect your spine while coding or gaming for 10 hours a day, you were paying $1,500 for rigid lumbar support. Enter Sihu.
The challenger.
Yeah, a Chinese startup disrupting the incumbents with a premium ergonomic marvel priced under $500.
And the mechanical engineering is what really sets it apart here. Sihu utilizes a full-body adaptive support system rather than just a static cushion.
Right. The analysis explains this uses dynamic, spring-loaded mechanisms that actually track the micro-movements of your spine.
It's pretty incredible.
If you lean forward intensely during a deep coding session or recline during a meeting, the chair's chassis pivots to maintain constant, contoured support. It adapts to you in real time.
Yeah.
And the parallel here is beautiful. Just as users are abandoning the bloated, rigid architecture of Chrome for agile alternatives like Arc, they are abandoning rigid, overpriced office chairs for adaptive hardware like Sihu.
This raises an important question, though, about the friction of disruption.
Okay, what do you mean?
Well, changing the tools you rely on every single day is inherently painful. Arc and Brave offer massive workflow gains, but, you know, you have to spend weeks relearning how to navigate your tabs and bookmarks.
I noticed that exact friction in the source material regarding the Sihu chair, too.
Yeah.
You save $1,000, yes,
yeah.
But it has a highly industrial mechanical aesthetic that might look completely out of place in your minimalist home office.
Right, it's not for everyone.
And because it's a disruptive startup, you're dealing with severe stock limitations and high international shipping fees. And worst of all, it has a notoriously difficult multi-hour assembly process with terrible instructions. You have to really want it to go through that hassle.
But that friction is the inherent cost of the frontier. Transitioning away from comfortable monopolies, whether it's migrating your dev team off Microsoft Copilot, moving your bookmarks away from Google Chrome, or building a complex ergonomic chair from scratch, it requires a willingness to endure temporary pain for a vastly superior, optimized result.
And that brings us to the ultimate takeaway of today's deep dive. We've traced the timeline of a massive technological shift today.
We really covered a lot of ground.
We looked at how Gemini Spark is turning the AI from a reactive intern into an autonomous chief of staff. We explored how Meta's screenless pendant uses SLAM and NPU architecture to map the physical world, hitting a wall with European privacy laws. We've seen how the sheer massive energy demands of this technology are driving SoftBank to build 5-gigawatt data centers on France's nuclear grid. We uncovered how the staggering financial realities of those data centers are forcing Copilot to charge developers by the token, which is driving an exodus to local open source models.
Yep.
And finally, how this relentless drive for efficiency is forcing you to rethink your browser and your office chair.
The synthesis of all these developments broadcasts an undeniable reality, really. The era of free, passive, software-only AI is over. The tech titans are fiercely translating cloud code into the physical world, and the baseline cost, both financially and energetically, is spiking.
Surviving this new silicon frontier requires absolute adaptability from you. The landscape is shifting rapidly. You might need to restructure your company's API budget to handle token billing.
Exactly.
You might need to switch your browser to reclaim your computer's memory. You might need to upgrade your physical workspace to support the longer, more intense hours required in this highly automated environment. Adaptability is your only defense against obsolescence.
I want to leave you with a lingering thought that builds on everything we've discussed today.
The court.
We are sprinting headfirst toward an agentic web, a reality where machines seamlessly negotiate with other machines on your behalf. If Gemini Spark is autonomously reading your emails and drafting your replies, and Arc Browser is autonomously reading the internet and summarizing its complexity before you even see the raw text, How much of your daily intellectual autonomy are you actually surrendering? In a future where proactive agents constantly insulate you from the friction of daily decisions, who is actually living your digital life?
Wow. That is a phenomenal and slightly unsettling question to mull over. We started this deep dive looking for convenience, but we might end up asking if we're okay with becoming passengers in our own routines.
It's definitely something to think about.
Thank you so much for taking this deep dive with us today. Keep questioning the tools you use, stay adaptable, and we'll see you next time as we continue to map out the edge of the Silicon Frontier.